This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. We're joined today by Dr. Jason Mitchell. Dr. Mitchell's the Chief Clinical and Chief Transformation Officer of Presbyterian Health. He's going to tell us about himself, about Presbyterian Health, about these roles as Chief Clinical and Chief Transformation Officer, and a lot more. Dr. Mitchell, can you take a moment to introduce yourself, tell us about yourself, and tell us about Presbyterian Health?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, and thanks for such a kind introduction. So I am a family medicine physician. I've been in leadership roles for about 18 years now and do still practice medicine and enjoy it immensely. Born and raised here in New Mexico and have been with Presbyterian for 16 years, but had a variety of different progressive leadership roles. And so really feel fortunate to be part of Presbyterian as an organization. You know, Presbyterian, we are a not-for-profit integrated organization. And we serve almost half of New Mexico by our system. And we have 9 different hospitals in the state. We have about 1,100 physicians and advanced practice clinicians that are employed by our system. And we also have a wonderful health plan that works in all products, Medicare, Medicaid, and commercial. And we've been in managed Medicaid for many years. So really a great place to be, a great state to be in, and a great way to have impact on a community.
Phenomenal. And take a moment on sort of the role of clinical and transformation executive. Two different roles, one combined role. What do those look like? And talk to us about that a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I have a wonderful role. I love my role. I love the work I get to do. And partly that's because I have great people that surround me. I have a great team. In my role, it's a fairly unique role. So I have ultimate oversight of our medical group, working in partnership with Dr. Darren Schaefer. He's the president of the medical group, but I oversee the medical group, which is just a ton of fun. I have accountability for our medical staffs in our hospitals, for the different aspects of our hospitals as well. And then I also have oversight of population health. And within our delivery system, we have about $500 million fully capitated to our medical group. So it really allows us to align our clinicians and our patients to give the best outcomes. So I oversee that aspect of how we deliver that integrated healthcare model. Along those same lines, and this is somewhat unusual, I also oversee supply chain. And that may seem odd why I would oversee a supply chain, but by doing that, it connects the clinicians to care variation and helps us really reduce costs, improve standardization, and allows us to do value-based components in our inpatient setting as well, and work with the clinicians to lower the cost of care for our customers and for our hospitals. And then additionally, I oversee enterprise quality and oversee our board quality and quality agenda, and then cross over into our health plan and work very closely with our health plan, which is just so rewarding, to get upstream of how you build benefits to serve patients and members. And so in that, I have shared responsibility over medical cost management, both with their CMO of the health plan and also the CFO of the health plan, and work a lot with plan design and even some sales. So I have a very broad role. I love every bit of it. And I guess probably what I love the most is all these pieces truly are so connected. And I'm in a place where I can help connect them where others may not see the connection or make the connection as quickly. So I feel fortunate to have that role in our organization.
Fascinating. When you look at your big priorities, take me back for a second. As you're handling a few different roles in the organization, more and more, as the organization's double-heading people, triple-heading people, when they've got a great executive giving a couple different leadership roles, what's your sense of that? Do you feel sometimes like it's clearly the right thing to do, rather give one good person a couple roles than have big roles handled not as well by multiple different people? What's the balance in that double hatting and triple hatting? And do you see that as being more and more what we're going to see in healthcare and in business?
You know, I think when it's done purposefully, it works really well, right? So accidentally, maybe not so much, but if you really are saying, how do we create an executive that connects pieces that didn't historically get connected, and you're strategic about it, then that makes a ton of sense. And so that's what my role is. My role is deliberately designed to connect our system and to integrate our system. And I think it works great. I think also what makes it work well is I spend a lot of time in the strategic domain, and I help drive and lead a lot of our strategy. And so that connectivity makes a lot of sense. Yeah, if I was in an area, and I love operations, you know, if I can do a whiteboard session and solve a problem, that's like magic for me, but that's not what I should be doing. And if I was in a situation where I was trying to run day-to-day operations with all this, you know, with all these different roles and responsibilities, I could never be successful, right? I have to have a team around me, and we work together as a team to really do this work together. And so I think it's a matter of how you're designing the work and the strength of your teams, and you can be very successful. I think if you're consolidating roles, and it's not well thought out, you can certainly overwhelm a leader, and it can make it harder to make those gains, and you can dilute really the great work that they could do if they had more focus. So I guess the answer is both models work as long as you're thoughtful about it.
Phenomenal. Fantastic. Thank you. And what are your big priorities this year? When you look at your role this year, what are you most focused on and excited about?
You know, I probably have three big pieces that I'm focused on. The first one is really pushing the boundaries on value-based care and connecting care. Although, you know, as an organization, about 70% of our revenue is value-based. So we are, you know, arguably, as an integrated system, one of the most integrated in the nation, short of a closed system or an open system with an open medical staff and multiple payers. And yet I think we haven't fully unlocked it. And I think that we can take this to the next level and create a model that will be a national model for integration. And so part of it is looking at all the aspects of that, and whether that is in the realm of behavioral health at scale, whether that's in the realm of, you know, primary care of the future that's not just dedicated to a single population, but is able to serve multiple populations and effectively serve them all well in different payment models, or whether it's really going after subpopulations where we can make profound differences in their lives. It's putting that value-based piece together, the health plan, the delivery system, the hospitals, and really delivering a model that does not require dismantling a system that should work better than the pieces and parts. And so that's a big piece of it. And I know that sounds funny coming from a system known for the integration, but I think we can push it so much further and deliver a much lower cost care and continue to drive outstanding outcomes for the people that we serve. That's probably a big piece. The second piece for me is really focusing on health equity and barriers to care. And, you know, I would argue that any organization that says they're top decile in any clinical outcome can't say that unless they've segmented that by a variety of social determinants of health, by a variety of populations, and said, yes, across all populations, we're top decile. But I think that very few organizations do that. And so we've got to begin to segment out our data and understand who's falling behind, and then take unique actions to elevate everybody. And it's a hard truth. And I think there's a lot of outstanding organizations that as they get to that and segment out their performance, they'll begin to realize that in fact, they've got people that are getting left behind. And so we've got a lot of focus on equity, a lot of focus on social determinants of health. And one thing that's been really, I think, amazing, we synchronize all of our data collection on social determinants of health. So whether you're in our hospital, our medical group, or in our health plan, we're consistently asking the same questions, but we do it at an appropriate interval so it's not overwhelming to our customers. And so far, we have collected social determinants of health on 860,000 New Mexicans. That's 40% of New Mexico. And not only have we collected it, but we now use it in our analytics organization to provide risk stratification, to connect people to resources, and bring it to the point of care, both in our electronic health record and our medical group, so that it's automatically connecting people to the needs that they have, as well as our health plan and their case management software, so it's automatically connecting them. So we've really, dived deeply into this, and we're able to actually make an impact. That said, it's just the beginning. There's so much more we could do there, but that's another big piece. And then, the final piece is clinician well-being. We have got to have healthy, happy clinicians that love their work and can come to work every day and feel refreshed and inspired if we want to deliver the best outcomes to our patients. And when I say clinicians, I use that term broadly. That's your physicians and advanced practice clinicians and nurses and physical therapists and respiratory therapists, our whole teams. And so we're spending a lot of time on really engaging our clinicians differently. Part of it is really on friction, taking out all those friction points in healthcare. And that's critical. But the other part is really helping people be their best selves. And if you think about a lot of clinical folks, they spend a lot of years working on their skills and working on their knowledge, but very little time have they gotten to devote to themselves. And so we've got a whole series of programs that allow people to spend some time and explore themselves and have an opportunity to do some reflection in structured settings, and provide support, you know, both in the emerging type setting, but also in, you know, planning ahead and taking 3 days out and doing a wonderful program to help reduce burnout and resilience. So a lot of investment there on clinician well-being. I think we have to continue to focus there.
Thank you so much. I mean, so interesting, both clinical wellness, clinician wellness, as well as value-based care and virtual health. And it's fascinating on virtual health. Virtual health strikes me as when we first started going with electronic health records in total, there was a lot of friction, and it took a while to get it right, to get it truly right. And there's, of course, there's no going back away from electronic health records. Virtual health, telehealth, and so forth, there's no going back, but it's one of these kinds of things where it's tremendously convenient, but there are still huge improvements that have to be made in how the engagement works between the clinician and the patient to actually get it right. It strikes me as we're still in the early innings of actually getting it right, and I say that partially from watching firsthand experiences with my mother and telehealth and so forth, and just, you know, the challenges of getting it right. But it strikes me that we can't go back either. There's no way around telehealth to leverage the workforce that we have to take care of something you talked about, which is clinical wellness. If in every other job, people have the ability, clinician wellness, if in every other job, people have the ability to work remotely, you know, like I'm working wherever I work from, my producer's working wherever she works from, and just great flexibility. Clinicians want this as well, at least to the greatest extent possible. And it's not going to be perfect, but there's no way around virtual health because clinicians want it, and to be able to leverage clinicians to give them some of their time back and to be able to take care of patients, to give them some of their time back. There's no way around virtual health, but it's got to get better and better. We're still at a spot where there's lots of room for improvement in it, but it is the future regardless, I think.
Oh, virtual health is going to be critical. And you're right, we're still in the early stages. And so we had mass adoption as a nation during this pandemic, but we set virtual health on top of our existing bricks and mortar processes. And so fundamentally did not take advantage of it. It's like you just built a new plane, but now you only drive it on the freeways, you don't fly it, right? And that's what we're doing in virtual health. It really is gonna take a whole new clinical model that makes it easier.
Yes. And a lot of things going right with that. I don't want to understate it. I mean, it's obviously we've been doing in radiology and imaging for a long time. There's a lot going right in it. But there's still a lot of work to be done to really focus on making it great, not just doing it and taking care of the clinic visit, not just somebody prescribing something, but really getting to the bottom of, does this patient have to get the colonoscopy? Does this patient have to do that? Does this patient have a mental health issue? Does this patient have something that we're just not seeing that maybe we'd see in person with fuller engagement, but we don't see in telehealth? And how do we get there? And it's a fascinating, you know, you see that it's just like in anything, in all these virtual everything, it's a new process, a new mode, and then it takes work to get good at it, just like it took work to get good at the EMR and have it be closer to fully useful with a little bit less friction, but it's fascinating.
It really is. You know, it's interesting. We did have one area that's been really successful. We have an asynchronous visit where patients, you know, for about 20 or 30 diagnoses, they fill out a questionnaire. It's pretty comprehensive. It writes everything up for the clinician. The clinicians are actually there, queued up immediately, can respond to it. They could call the patient if they need to, but they usually don't. Write prescriptions, give advice. The provider time into that is about 90 seconds. The patient total time is about 10 minutes, and 70% of the visits that go through there are resolved in that time. And so it's an example of how you really scale, right? And you provide those simple things that patients need. You provide an excellent experience on demand. The clinicians are happy. And so that's a great example of how it works, which is different than I'm in clinic seeing patients real time, and then I have video visits mixed in, and it's just clunky, right? And so we really are at that pace where we have to start thinking about what that model looks like.
And it is that challenge. The 90-second thing you talked about, I want to focus on that for 1 second, and that is sort of, and I assume this is one of these kinds of things where that works so well for a vast majority of the visits, but it almost becomes incumbent on the patient to say, I need more than that. I yep. need more engagement than that, because that's when this gets sort of, I think, missed, where, you know, it's almost like you've gotten the spot with the dentist office. Dentist office are the worst example. The worst example is sort of like the person's got to come in for 90 seconds to make sure they could look at the most important things and bill for the dental visit while the dental hygienist does most of the visit. And this is the leverage model. And it's okay. But you do feel like sometimes the dentist is just coming in to make sure they can bill rather than to actually think through it all. Or it's hard to tell as a patient whether they're actually thinking through anything or they're just there to make sure they get their 90 seconds so they could call it a dental visit too. And it's a fascinating thing. You almost like, you have to make sure the clinician, this is part of the art of this, the clinician, whether it's 90 seconds, 2 minutes, 5 minutes, 7 minutes, has to find some way to be engaged enough with the patient that they can read through some of the clues. It's not just what the patient sort of said on paper, but a little bit more holistically what's going on with the patient. And I'm a little bit concerned that there's some balance that has to be struck if we want to get this right. And it's going to take work to keep on figuring out what is the right balance.
Yeah, I'll tell you, on this particular one, we've been working on it for 5 years now. And so we've got this aspect working really, really well. It's high value for the patient and high value for the clinician. The challenge has been those patients where it's not appropriate, the AI actually boots them out to the next phase, which would be a telemedicine or in-person visit. And it's how do you make all of that seamless for the clinicians and patients so the patients don't have to think about which one they're going to. It actually moves them through the process. And it will either take them to an asynchronous visit, or it could take them to a video visit, or it could take them to a same-day in-person visit and help them schedule. And it's creating that continuity. It's creating that connected care process. And that's the next iteration. That's what we're really focusing right now, is that digital experience that connects it all so patients don't have to think of the best place to go. Our systems and our processes help always bring the patient to the right level of care and the right caregiver to them.
But that's a brilliant... But that's a brilliant perspective to at least understand that it's a sort of a spectrum, a continuum of this is right for this, but we've got to make sure we kick that person to the right type of visit. Yep. So the longer visit, the different engagement, or to wherever they have to go, or in person, whatever it has to be, if that's the right thing for it. I think that's the key, is that you get to be able to the right place. It's almost triaging to the right spot, the right kind of visit. Yep. To make sure that it actually works out right. Because if not, you end up with more and more patients defaulting back to the ER, so they don't. Yep. They don't feel like you're getting the full engagement they need. And obviously for lots of small things, you want these quick visits where whatever it is. In any event, Jason, Dr. Mitchell, what a pleasure to visit with you. What an amazing career and perspective. Thank you for joining us today on the Baxter's Healthcare Podcast, and can't wait to visit with you more. What a pleasure. Thank you.
I really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Take care.